is gonna have the news.
It is Monday, July 21st. This is LA Podcast. I am your co-host, Alyssa Walker, and I am here with
Rachel Reyes,
Sophie Bridges,
our producer. Welcome back to the show once again, Sophie. It's always good to have you here, that you can like, you can edit the show live as you say it.
Yeah.
You can keep us on track.
I'm in Pro Tools right now, you guys.
Just deleting everything irrelevant to the
conversation. I'm deleting as we go.
Deleting as we speak.
This is going to be a 5-minute episode.
Speaking of deleting things, we did have some good news, although it's only, I guess, like half good news. We'll consider it a half win. After everything we discussed last week with the increasing militarization of our public spaces, we had this kind of surprise announcement halfway through the week that the National Guard is going to withdraw half of its deployment, right? So this is, what numbers were we looking at here?
There was about 4,000 National Guard people, members on the ground.
Guardsmen, but that seems yeah, inappropriate.
I didn't want to say that. People who happen to be in the National Guard, about 4,000
people of
here.
National Guard experience.
Exactly. That is the group that they are in. And Trump announced that he was withdrawing half of them. So not the full 4,000, about 2,000 remained. I think the exact number is like 1,892 will remain. And we still have about 700 Marines also on the ground here in the city. So we are still half occupied, fully annoyed, but this is a small win to celebrate for sure.
Yes, and Karen Bass, of course, did do a huge victory lap, sent out the fundraising emails right away, you know, making it seem like the actions that they were taking was responsible for the withdrawal. But I think also there just isn't anything for them to do, as a bunch of stories reported this week. The New York Times talked to a bunch of soldiers who said morale was extremely low. You think? One quote was, they gave Disneyland tickets to the people who worked in the wildfires. No one's handing out Disneyland tickets now. Ouch. And you're looking at, like, these people are here. They're very bored. And they're in some cases having to embark upon, they called it, the Los Angeles mission. Possibly against, like, going to war with their own neighborhoods.
Yeah. And people are not, I mean, a group of us have been going now every week, every other week, specifically in June, to yell at them, to be in front of them, to tell them they shouldn't be here, at least in West LA. And I know that that was true in downtown LA as well. People are regularly driving by them and telling them to go home. They are not welcome here. And they know that, of course, that's going to lead to poor morale.
Well, yeah, now there's going to be these like crazy signing bonuses for ICE agents. So you will be able to, maybe if you don't want to be in the National Guard, you can accept one of these egregious sums of money to join a rapidly expanding secret police force that will be coming to a city near you. There is a little bit more good news also. So we spoke about this big ACLU lawsuit in last week's show. I believe the ruling came down on Friday. So we had been recording that morning. The ruling came down later that day. So the ruling was basically a temporary restraining order saying that you just cannot do this. You cannot racially profile. You can't just run up to a car wash and grab people. And many rapid response networks were reporting immediately over the weekend that they saw fewer apprehensions. Doesn't mean they're not still out there, that the tactics are shifting somewhat. They are pulling people out of cars, making it seem like they're tracking someone on purpose. I heard a really scary account that there's been these checkpoints that kind of look like DUI checkpoints that have been set up, and someone who didn't have their any ID on them got fingerprinted. Meantime, we're up to over 3,000 people who have been detained. At the same time, we had another very terrifying changing tactic where the sheriff's department is handing over its prisoners to ICE. And this was exactly the type of thing that we were assured was not going to happen as part of our sanctuary city laws. There's some kind of loophole that's allowing them to hand over incarcerated people. And in that case, the federal government does have access to basic information about who is incarcerated. This seems like another terrifying new plan or new way for them to just meet their quotas if they're just going through the jails and just plucking people out.
Yeah.
And another example of how the carceral system, being the racist system that it already is working directly, our private carceral systems too, yes, by the way, yes, working with both our federal government to disappear people.
Right. We have no real assurances, I guess, even if they say that they're not going to cooperate with immigration officials.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we had the mayor, you know, made this big announcement last week saying that city departments had to get ready and make better plans. There's a lot of confusion right now with city departments wondering if they can be allowed into buildings. I actually heard, you know, a lot of people having to spend their time trying to gather enough information to make a plan, only to say that the city attorney said that they couldn't do certain aspects of the plans. Like they can't even maybe hand out red cards in certain city instances because that might be right. So we really we need some clarity about our own sanctuary city status. And then the numbers are extremely bad. As anticipated, the county had requested an economic impact report on how this was all affected the region. And there's some basic analysis that came out from CalMatters that we saw the state saw a 3.1 drop in private sector employment in June. That is terrifying. So that is that's real proof that the economy is basically cratering because of this enforcement activity.
There is something to be said about the fact that folks are scared to go to work if they are still here, folks who have been disappeared. That impacts our entire economic ecosystem. That impacts our communities entirely. The ripple effects are instant. This is pretty instant.
Yeah.
And this 3% drop, by the way, sits right in between COVID and 2007, 2008. So this is a very large drop. And this is not to, you know, reduce our immigrant, our undocumented populations to their labor at all. But this is in LA. I can't even imagine what it's going to look like once this is rolled out throughout the country, how dire this situation could get with our local economies.
Yeah, I mean, I think we all probably have felt that just walking down the street, riding the bus.
Bus ridership also down dramatically.
Bus ridership is dramatically down. I was like on the 14 bus at 8:30 in the morning the other day, and I was able to sit down.
Right.
Like that was crazy.
Right.
I shouldn't be able to sit down at 8:30 in the morning on a bus.
And there's some very real impacts we're even seeing with this decline in employment, which it's very similar to COVID in many ways. As I think, Rachel, you said the very first week this started, it's the quote unquote essential workers that are in the most danger, pulling themselves out of the workforce or being too scared to go to work, whatever is working for them as a tactic to stay alive, to stay in this country, to stay with their families. But then you have some real shifts now with institutions kind of acknowledging that, especially someplace like we saw Cal State LA is moving to kind of an online / hybrid model and saying that, you know, we're treating this basically as a pandemic at this point.
It is. I'm happy that it's happening now, of course. Like, I don't want to say too little too late, because anything that we can do to save people is something we can do to save people, right? So I think this is great. I would love to see other institutions model themselves after this. Mm-hmm. I would also like to see the city and county doing very similar things. I would love to see therapy appointments be able to be moved online. I would love to see any visits with social workers being moved online. More telehealth appointments happening as well. Like anything that we can move to an online space, we should. Any lessons we've learned from COVID, right now, great time to apply them. Something I would also love to see, an eviction moratorium, right? If you can't go to work because you could get kidnapped, you should not then have to be expected to pay rent. How are you meant to do that? This would be a great time for that type of rental assistance to exist, especially if we're not going to have an eviction moratorium. Then we need to be giving people money so that they can stay housed, because the result of this, without any protections in place, is that more people, more families end up unhoused and in different types of danger once right. they get to that point as well. So I just think that, like, this would have been a great opportunity. Now is still a good time. June would have been a great time. Now is also a good time to really look back at those pandemic preparedness plans that every company should have prepared, private and public, and put those into place. And instead of, you know, COVID, it's ICE now, and to figure out ways around that, because it's the same workers who are at risk.
Yeah. One of the things that struck me about Cal State LA going online is that, not that everybody who is in college is like necessarily of the same age group and necessarily like went straight from high school, but a lot of those students are the same students who their high schools would have been shut
yes.
down
yes.
During the pandemic. And so and so I'm just thinking about that cohort and like what it feels like to kind of be back in that place. And like, on the one hand, probably those students are great at learning online. They're very familiar with it. But yeah, I think it does highlight this point that you're making, Rachel, that like, we have been here before. We've been here before really recently.
And during a Trump administration. Like, how about the fact that like our inability to deal with these problems has now struck twice? I once you started saying that, I was like, okay, the kids that were kindergartners when the pandemic began are now going to be heading to middle school in the fall. And mm-hmm. I'm terrified about LAUSD's campuses reopening because they become a big target for ICE. Mm-hmm. We already saw them. That was one of the first places that they targeted when, you know, before the siege began, you know, in April.
Yeah.
Yes. And they were targeting graduations. And, you know, so mm-hmm. now I'm like, how, and there's already been lots of conversation about this within the rapid response networks, is like, how do we make sure that schools are safe, quote unquote, again, for families and kids to go back to? It's not that far away. School starts in mid-August. And that's like after that 60-day deployment supposedly ends. But what reassurance do we have that anything's going to be different then? So these poor kids.
Yeah. You did, Alyssa, I think you made the point last week that a lot of people feel safer sending their kids to LAUSD campuses because there has actually been much more preparedness, much more messaging directly from the schools than some of these other like institutions and agencies throughout the city and throughout the county. I mean, you know, not to be this person who's like, and the unions are the answer. But I mean, actually, I don't know why I would not want to be that person. But like, I think it does feel like part of the reason that our schools have responded so powerfully is the like power of UTLA.
Yep.
I think they have built so much power over the last few years in particular. And they were also so forefront during the pandemic. So it like that's a really strong example where you can see the lessons play out and you can see leaders like saying, yeah, we learned this thing then. We're going to put it in place now. But I am curious, like, are there any other examples of, there was this piece in LA Public Press this week about bus drivers who are trying to keep the doors closed to federal agents. And I think a lot of the piece has to do with like weighing whether it's legal for them to do that. And it seems it's like mm-hmm. they're putting themselves in a really, really complicated position. But there was like this really good point that it's like, well, you know that letting this person onto the bus is going to create a chaotic and dangerous situation for all of the bus riders, basically, no matter what. Like, why would you not be able to say, we can't have this altercation happen on this bus? But I think, like, just thinking about that and how it really didn't feel like a system-wide response the way the schools do, like the way, like, you can see this organizing happening through the unions. I think it was, like, one of the first questions that came out, and there were those, like, scary graphics circulating that were, like, about whether or not ICE was going to be allowed on buses and on trains. And so it's a question everybody's been asking from the beginning, and it's confusing to me that, like, Metro hasn't come forward with anything clearer.
Well, they had a big conversation about it at a meeting, and they are doing a report back with a strategy. So there was a motion that was, you know, put forth by Janice Hahn, the outgoing board chair. They are going to say something, but I don't know what they're going to say. You know, I don't know what you can say. You could have somebody like, you know, the bus operators through their union do something similar to what they did when there were a bunch of attacks on bus operators. Right. So remember, they got those plexi, you know, kind of shield that protected the bus driver.
Yeah.
And that was a major like organizing win because their union was like, we're not driving anymore if you don't take care of this. So there could be some push from that side. But I think the bigger question for Metro has been, you know, this conversation about what happens when they're allowed to be on the system. There's no, like, it's the right. same thing of like any kind of public space, public system. To me, it's like, we often let these types of federal agents work within our systems. Like, we have like Homeland Security do big events. Like they're like, you know, TSA people come and they're in Union Station all the time, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, the question for just the regular riders, when are they going to feel comfortable riding that system again? Even if it's just regular, like, you know, even if it's just regular, like TSA, non-ICE Homeland Security people who are just doing basic crowd control for major events leading up to the next 3 years, when do people start to feel comfortable riding transit at all?
I think the NSSE of it all is really interesting, Alyssa, because are we
Please
letting
that
DHS
really fast.
Be
explain
here?
Explain that really fast, Rachel.
Sorry. The National Special Security Event designation that you just referenced with regards to mega events, having the Department of Homeland Security here, I don't know that it's so much we're letting them be here. It's that legally these are designated NSSE events, which means that DHS has to be here. So I think that like framing is important. Like, I don't know that the city and the county want these people to be here. My question about the report back that Metro will eventually publish, are they exploring or researching the legality of not letting federal agents on, knowing their intent? Because I feel like the conversation is not one of morality or ethics. Like, I would be surprised if it was, but I would imagine if you saw someone with a rifle waiting to get on the bus, like a normal person, like, would you open the doors? Like, you know, what is the legality there? But why is it different when it's someone in a uniform? And a lot of these people look like bounty hunter weirdos. They don't even look like they're
right. Do you,
you
ask
know,
for their ID before
quote-unquote.
You can even get? I think the one operator was going to ask for a warrant for them to be able to even get on the bus. And I think that's that falls into what this temporary restraining order is asking. Like,
right.
I think that does give them some legal footing. I think that is a really good way to think about it. The one thing that was really concerning to me, there was one instance, according to Metro, and I think these things are pretty well documented and reported. Like, I do believe what Metro is saying. Like, they said there was only one instance where ICE agents were coming into the paid areas of the system. And what was terrifying to me about that instance was that ICE agents were asking people for identification and documentation as they were trying to get inside this transit center. And that, I think, is probably the most terrifying precedent. If it starts to become checkpoints of, you know, accessing your buses and trains, we cannot let that happen. And Metro has to say something about that's not allowed, or a certain perimeter or something. Like, I don't, you know, that's what I'd like to see.
Well, with NSSE,
and this is the NSSE designation, just to reiterate, is for the Olympics and Paralympics for 2028. And it's already in place 4 years early. That was part of the deal that we made as a city. But we're also going to see a lot of other special designations coming up as part of the World Cup happening in all cities across the country.
It's kind of like, you know, that meme that's like, I would like to stop living through world historical events. Like, I'm like, I would like stop living through new security designations.
Well, you know, write a letter to Bill Clinton, because this is his fault specifically. But what I want people to understand, right, we don't want checkpoints, one, anywhere, but two, at bus stops, at train stops. When you look at what will happen with the Olympics, they already want some type of perimeter around these games. And with regards to these perimeters, like where games will be happening, where events will be taking place, you will have to enter with some type of QR code, some type of facial recognition, some type of app.
Yes.
Like, we we already saw in Paris 2024 the amount of facial recognition that was used, the amount of tracking that was done on people that were there. Mm-hmm. Even if this ICE stuff wasn't happening, if Trump wasn't president, if it was anybody else, we would still have facial recognition. We would still have tracking of people in our city because of the Olympics. Mm-hmm. So I think that, like, we might be testing some technologies in this moment that will be improved upon, in quotes, not my opinion.
Oh yeah. Now improved that they have upon billions of dollars to add to that.
Infused. And... yeah. From DHS. Exactly. So right. I don't know. Like, yes, we don't want checkpoints at bus stops now for anybody, but we will have checkpoints in 2028 around the games, and people need to be prepared to fight back against that, because if we don't stop the games from happening or cancel them outright, we will be getting checkpoints in 2028 regardless.
And that was brought up by a lot of immigration lawyers ahead of the Club World Cup games and the Gold Cup games that happened earlier this summer, really cautioning people who, you know, if they've said you have any concerns or if you have any worries about your status or your documentation, you just really shouldn't go to these events mm-hmm. that are in places like SoFi or Intuit Dome, because they're already doing that and we don't know who they share the information with. You know, we don't know what's going to happen, especially when Palantir becomes a sponsor of the 2020. Mm-hmm. it's not mm-hmm. happening yet, but I could totally see it happening and it would be absolutely terrifying. We have not talked about what's happening at Children's Hospital LA. Mm-hmm. This has been a really wrenching situation for families who mm-hmm. have been going to Children's Hospital for gender affirming care. And this has been, I had no idea the history of this department, the Center for Trans Youth Health and Development. For 30 years, Children's Hospital has been basically one of the only places that low-income families could get this kind of care. And of course, as Trump came into office, there was a lot of concerns about their funding because they are publicly funded and because they draw a lot of money from the federal government, a lot of that money was at risk. In February, they started to say that they weren't going to take new patients or initiate hormonal therapy. And there were so many protests. There's been weekly protests. It's just been like a constant row of people lined up. Elected officials were there. You know, a lot of people showed up to stand up for trans kids. And they have ended up reversing those decisions, at least temporarily. But then we started to hear what I saw as the executives, the people who were kind of in charge of making sure the hospital stays solvent, getting really concerned in June. And there was a memo that was shared that was saying, you know, these threats are all coming together, you know, from the federal government. And then also FBI tips are going to be submitted to kind of report hospitals for providing this kind of care. And they got really worried, not just from a funding perspective, but that they might be attacked legally mm-hmm. from the bastards in the White House. So this week is actually going to be the closure of this center on July 22nd. And this was the statement they put out. Despite this deeply held commitment to supporting LA's gender diverse community, the hospital has been left with no viable path forward except to close the center. And this was just a very gutting decision, mm-hmm. but really, like, this institution, one of the only places that these families could go. I mean, you have to hope that the hospital really tried to do everything they could to keep the program alive. But this is a very terrifying sign of things to come, I felt.
Well, I think in terms of, like, the statement they put out and saying, like, we tried to do everything, we're left with no choice, it really reminds me of the way that abortion providers talk about, particularly in places like in states where you're the last abortion clinic in the state and then you're forced to shutter, which is something that, of course, we've seen happen over the last decade or so. And I feel like we've heard a lot of those stories. I would love to hear more stories in media from people who are specifically healthcare providers for trans healthcare. I think, like, hearing that storytelling of, like, first of all, like, more people should know exactly what we're talking about, because it's so easy for the Trump administration and TERFs in general and everybody on that side of things to talk about Children's Hospital as, you know, doing like genital mutilation on children. And like, that's just not what is happening. And it's like a really ugly and horrible lie. And I think it's really important for us to be like really upfront and clear about like what that healthcare looks like. There's a lot of power in like speaking out about that. And then also, yeah, hearing from providers who are talking about like exactly like what has forced their hand. I think having that clarity publicly is really important. But yeah, it's definitely been making me think a lot about just like the ability to like spin narratives around other people's bodies is like, it's a type of politics that I think just like strikes as like so immediately ugly and horrifying. And like, I have a very like visceral bodily reaction to it.
Yeah, it is that, Sophie. It's disturbing and ugly. And it's harmful. And I've had a hard time interacting with it. I think as I do with like any news that involves children and teens, I find like personally hard to interact with. But this is just like, it's just sad. It's sad to not have the governor's support, and we can get to that later. But I think like, it's just sad. I couldn't imagine being a child or a teen that is able to go to a place like this. This might be the only place that they can go to where they have support, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's also how I think about it too. Like, just people to talk to that understand them. The loss of that, we cannot measure, I think. The amount of support that was actually provided by this place beyond just the people that were helped and treated, you can't measure, because once you start to feel right in yourself, the ripple effects of that are incredibly powerful. So this is like such a loss for us. And I will also say, as other people have been saying, this will not stop at children. This will extend to adults who are trans.
Totally.
And I just want to remind people that gender affirming care looks like a lot of things for a lot of different people. That's makeup, that's clothing. But also, if you want to just talk about medical stuff, when you go through menopause and you experience menopause, you're going to be probably using hormones as well. I know people who were taking hormones as teens because they weren't growing properly and they needed that growth spurt, and their body needed a little help. There are so many different reasons why you might need to be utilizing hormone therapy. So I just want to remind people of that. They are using children as a pawn without giving them any seat at the table. And it is just a way to blow the door open to take away the rights of adults. And that's just something I really, really want people to focus on as well, because it's not going to stop with protect the kids. They're going to continue to use children as ways to take away everyone's rights, and it's not okay.
Yeah. Well, also another big talking point that comes from kind of anti-trans extremists is that like this is a new phenomenon, and that something is happening culturally where like particularly with kids, I think they have this like save the kids, this is a new thing, which of course we know is not true. There have always been trans people, there always will be trans people, and there will always be people who are seeking options. You know, Rachel, you pointed out that gender affirming care can look like a lot of things. Western medicine is like not the only place that people seek comfort and safety in their bodies, but there are always going to be people seeking the type of care that we are losing with this children's hospital loss. So the reality is also that this is just actually creating a dangerous situation where people don't have the institution to rely on, and people will seek this healthcare on their own terms and on their own and in situations that are criminalized. And so it is just like these policies are like designed to kill trans people.
Yes, that's the whole point. And even to your point, Sophie, like the idea that this is a new thing is disproven by the fact that Children's Hospital has been doing this for 30 years. Like, they were like one of the first places to offer services like puberty blockers and hormones and surgical procedures. Like, and you know, just the fact that this place exists is proves everyone wrong who's trying to make that argument. And I think that is part of it. This institution that's been created at the, as this safe place, as this life-saving place, just makes it even more catastrophic for these families. I was watching Jesse Thorne, friend of the show, podcaster, has two kids at the clinic, and was talking about at a rally about how difficult it is to just lose the trust in the place that they have been going. And he said, my oldest has been out for 8 years. And in that time, she's been aware that there are people in the world who think she should not be able to live as who she is, and that there is danger to her in the world. For it to come from this institution that we ask them to trust is a very dark betrayal. And I think that was like, going back to who's going to stand up for these kids, and the hospitals might not. And now looking at the way that the state is approaching this, the state might not either. One of the reasons that the hospital cited for their inability to continue to provide this care is that Medi-Cal reimbursements were not going to be covering these types of procedures. And remember that the state also just cut undocumented Californians from Medi-Cal. So the reaction here is, you know, it's a financial one, of course. Like, you can just say, we don't have money, we don't have funding, but we're making policy decisions that are, so you're going to have people, like you said, this is designed to kill people. And you even see it at the local level, although the, you know, the county's been, we've talked about, you know, some, a lot of the funding for like HIV programs ending. The county's trying to scramble to keep a 988 hotline going that would serve trans youth after the funding was ended for the national one in July. So we have to kind of pick up the pieces at a local and state level, but at the state level, we're kind of seeing it fall apart. And that's been, like you said before, Rachel, some of it is the signaling coming from our own governor. Bad Gav this time. Really bad. Did you both watch that podcast that he was on?
I read the quotes because I can't watch just, again, anything like about like, that is anti-child, and especially coming from Gavin Newsom's mouth, like I cannot watch his greasy head say these things. But yeah, it's been very anti-trans. And even just with like talking about fairness in sports, that's a big one as well. The big panic that we're all having.
Oh my God.
Well, like what he said on this.
And Alyssa, you listen, so illuminate.
I'm sorry.
A
again,
bit
I'm really, yeah. I'm, I apologize. Just
it's
to,
okay.
Just to set it up. I know. I can't. It hurts me.
You're
I don't
addicted.
Want to listen to
it.
It wasn't even his podcast. It was this other guy. I don't even know who he is. But it was like 4 hours long. I was like, how could you possibly like talk this long about this stuff? But, what he's basically saying is that the fairness in sports question, and he was getting these people to like counsel him on like what we should do about fairness in sports, and should we let trans people compete in sports, because it is the state law, you know, we have a state law in place that allows this to happen, has now like turned him against the idea of gender affirming care. Like, the more he looked into it, the more he realized that maybe trans people shouldn't exist. And then he said this quote that was just so baffling to me: the trans issue for me is so novel, I'm trying to understand as much as anyone else about the whole pronoun thing. Like,
oh my God,
have in his like
what?
State government, like people having pronouns as part of their like there, it's in your
signatures. What do you mean you don't understand?
Like, it where are you even getting
what
this?
Is there
like
to misunderstand? I don't know. I just my whole thing is, I as an adult person, if I were to race today, a 10-year-old girl who happens to be trans, I would lose because I am not good at running. And that is just the facts. Like, if you're good at a sport, you're good at a sport. If you're going to dominate the sport, you're going to dominate the sport. Like, and I just think this conversation is such a waste of time. I'm so sick of it. And the fact that he is doing his own research is bizarre. What conversations? You are not a scientist. You're not even a sociologist, Gavin. Like, there's let alone
he's just a podcaster
he's just a podcaster who happens
like
to
us.
Be governor I don't know. I think that he should trust actual scientists and medical doctors, real doctors. Mm-hmm. None of this Dr. Mercola stuff.
Just trust the kids. just trust the kids. That's really all we're asking for you to do. Let kids be kids.
Exactly. Let kids be kids.
Well, I also think he's doing this thing that I feel like this is a, I feel like it's a type of Democrat that is emerging where, that's kind of like, oh, we want to create this version of being a Democrat where, oh, don't worry, we know that the party went too far with all of these identity politics issues, and we're going to do all of the things that are good about being a Democrat, minus supporting trans people. And it's specifically that. And there's sometimes it's like, oh, we've gone too far with DEI, we've gone too far with woke in general. But I do think that they've made anti-trans politics front and center of the like concessions to, and I know we've talked about this on the show before, an imaginary voter, like
imaginary voter.
Who's like,
imaginary person.
I sure could go both ways. Oh, Democrats suddenly don't think that like bathrooms, we should have bathrooms. Like, it's so frustrating to me. No bathrooms.
They're just doing 90s Republicans. They're just 90s Republicans. That's what that is. Because today's Republicans are not Republicans. And our Democrats today are considered centrist in most other places. So we don't even really have like an example of a left. We have people who are centrist. We have 90s Republicans in the same party. And then we have, I don't know, who's like the last normal Republican? Couldn't even name one. And then we have the GOP. Yeah, Arnold, perhaps, maybe. It's just Gavin Newsom trying. I mean, he's going to run for president, right? So he's just, in his mind, he thinks that the entire country is to the right, quote unquote, on the trans issue, again, in quotes, because it's not a fucking issue. And he is trying to soft launch this, like, I'm a cool Democrat. I'm basically a Republican. I'm basically a Republican. So you should just vote for me instead of voting for the Republican.
Did you see that? He was like on it. A field trip. And it was a
shame. Do you have a tracker on him, Alyssa?
I know. I'm sorry.
Alyssa is obsessed.
So sorry. No. It's really unfortunate. But he did a good job. Again, like, this is like the good Gav, bad Gav. We can't not talk about it, because then he does really great responses to some things, like his press office rapid response accounts were yelling at Stephen Miller, who was whining about losing the ACLU lawsuit, and he called him a fascist cuck, which was insane.
Like, crazy.
Extremely good. And then J.D. Vance went to Disneyland, which I'm so confused about, because I thought Disneyland was too woke to go to. But he's at
Disneyland being like, haha, National Guard, you're not invited.
National Guard, I didn't give you any tickets to go to Disneyland, but I'm here with my family. And he, Gav, again, did this great response, which was like, hope you're enjoying a day with your family while you're tearing families apart in Southern California. So it's a shame that he has to ruin all this actual good politicking, which is one of the names of one of his other podcasts, with this horrible, horrible stance on an issue that is actually quite important if you are the governor of California. So,
yeah, I do think those things are actually consistent, unfortunately. Like, I think it's like, yet again, we have somebody who is very interested in being a Democrat on a national stage, positioning everything as Trump is the devil, all of our problems are Trump and his affiliates.
Right. When it's
more, and not actually, not going back to like the issues that are at the heart of it and the people who are actually being affected.
Yeah. Well, another actually pretty good thing that Gavin did this week was defending a good Gav moment was defending California's high-speed rail, which once again came under attack from the Trump administration, something we knew was coming, but I kind of didn't think that they were going to go through with it. I'll do like the very briefest summary of what happened here. You all voted. Well, you guys didn't. How old were you guys in 2008? You guys were like, could you
I
even
did
vote?
Not. You're- no.
No.
I And many of our other listeners, you don't have to answer that question.
Were you an Obama train voter, Alyssa?
I don't think I can legally ask you for your ages, but let's just say maybe I was the only one who voted for this. Yeah,
we live in a lawless city, Alyssa.
Yeah,
there
so
are
you
actually
can now.
No laws here.
And you I can ask us for any information. I
shared your status with the federal government.
Alyssa is scanning my face right now.
Yeah, that's true. I have all your information. So in 2008, some of us voted for a bond measure that was going to fund California high-speed rail. I think everybody knows what happened in the meantime, but it hasn't been built yet. But it is under construction. I was not able to take it on my last trip to San Francisco, but it is happening. They're in the track laying phase. It's in the Central Valley that it was started for many reasons, one of which that was just the first place they had the right-of-way finalized. Because it, mm-hmm. as you know, it's hard to build any transportation project in this state. And a lot of the delays were actually from Republicans who control some of the areas through which these trains mm-hmm. are supposed to be traveling through. So in February, Sean Duffy, MTV star, now the temporary director of NASA also somehow. So really
no.
looking forward to all these VJs getting these amazing jobs in space. He held a press conference at Union Station that I went to with the big announcement that they were going to audit the high-speed rail project. It was one of the most amazing protests I'd ever seen, where all these people were just shouting him down. He could not finish mm-hmm. his remarks. It was very excellent work from the organizers, and train fans are just, you know, they don't mess with them. The fact that he even held this in LA was just really funny, because we are starting to make some improvements at Union Station for welcoming high speed rail, but the real activity is happening in Central Valley. Why he didn't go there is because he's a coward, because they're creating jobs and like they're really happy that this is starting there. So he knew he couldn't go there. So what they're trying to say is that there's $4 billion in federal grant funds that they're going to take back because they haven't built the train yet. It's not actually that much money compared to what we're spending on it already. 80% of it has been funded by the state of California, and we could actually spend even more money on it if we weren't building and expanding freeways, which we continue to do in the state. So this big statement comes out from Duffy. It's time for this boondoggle to die. And what the state is arguing is that, great, yeah, thanks. Like, we've never heard that one before. What the state is trying to argue is that basically they're trying to do is illegal. Like, the funding was given to us. It belongs to us.
Yeah.
And we don't have to reiterate how much that California gives to the federal government. So it's basically just a very tiny bit of our money coming back to us. To me, it's a big deal that this is happening. They're going to start going after other parts of our infrastructure in the same way that they're going after our economy. You know, it's the same playbook, just really punishing California. And to me, it was just mm-hmm. one of those moments where, you know, we knew this was coming. We knew this was going to happen. They've always been against it. But again, we're going to have to really figure out, from a state level, from Gavin's perspective, from our legislators, like, how are we going to actually fix this on our own? And are these people as dedicated to transit and public transportation, getting people out of cars and airplanes, as we said mm-hmm. we were, as this progressive state? Rachel doesn't even want high speed rail. She's not even that interested.
We're not.
Yeah. Well, okay. So
deadass.
Here's one thing that I've been thinking about, is that this is coming at the same time as there's also this other project being considered allegedly by this administration that is high speed rail connecting Los Angeles to New York.
It's not real.
That would
it's
be
totally
built,
fake.
That would be built before the World Cup.
Yeah, by next summer. Is
allegedly
what
open on train
totally.
Day in like spring 2026.
Love train day.
Which I found out about from Rachel's Instagram story, where she said something along the lines of, "You could not pay me to get on this."
It's except verbatim what I said. Yes.
And I would like to ask you, Rachel, do you hate trains?
I'll answer that after Alyssa goes.
They definitely timed this weirdo announcement with the fact that they were going to say that they're going to take away California's only real high, the only real high speed rail, which project in the country, which is going to travel over 200 miles an hour. They were saying that you could get from LA to New York in 72 hours. Amtrak already does that now. The slow train already gets you there. You can also drive in half the time. There's no high speed rail about it. They're just using the actual tracks that are there and trying to say that they're going to drop a private train on the existing tracks. Mm-hmm. There's nothing novel or interesting or new or even like real about it. But then the fact that this like took over every headline and everybody was talking about it and it was like showing up on Instagram mm-hmm. as they're trying to defund the actual high speed rail. I mean, I was losing my mind. But yeah. Yes. But then, yes. And then I said that to Rachel too. I was like, do they even know what they're yes. saying here?
No, and exactly that. That was my answer to you, Sophie, is I'm a numbthought, just like the rest of us, right? I do love a train, but I also love a plane. I just feel like... I just feel like, I mean, I'm all for high-speed rail that is actually high-speed and that, you know, means what it says. But also, like, let's get our public train system up and running and big and beautiful, as they like to say, before we talk. Is again, because to me, I'm sorry. I know I couldn't vote for it. And I don't know that I would have in 2008. But the high speed rail bullet train is giving gondola vibes to me. It's giving gondola. And I just feel like there are like other things that we should be spending all of this money on improving before we can kind of get there. Like, let's learn how to walk before we run. That's my thinking. And that's fine if people don't agree with me. That's my personal thought. But that's also why I'm not like a transit planner. And I think it was incredibly smart of them to announce this. They're SEO queens. Obviously, like they took a page right out of Kristen Cavallari's book and they knew what they were doing, like do a bad thing and right. then distract everyone with another thing. And that's just SEO. That is what it is.
It
and
did I seemed you know, intentional. No, it was very I was already calling it out. And then that like making the point that Amtrak already travels this distance and nobody bothered to look up the tickets. And then that night was the night that they were like, and we're defunding the California high-speed rail. But I think to your point, Rachel, there is a lot of truth to what you're saying. And we're doing a really good job with that also in the state of California. Caltrain just did an amazing job electrifying their trains, increasing service, like buying new actual train cars that look really cool and hip. And they have seen such an increase in ridership. That's like their, you know, regional train system that will eventually be a part of this high speed rail network, right? So every part of the state has to make that jump to be able to eventually make the high speed rail network work as well as it will. And we need to do that here in Southern California too. Like Metrolink doesn't have that same kind of pathway yes. for mm-hmm. electrifying its trains mm-hmm. or, you know, buying new train cars. They do a really good job delivering the service that they deliver, but we could go a lot harder on the regional rail mm-hmm. improvements. And then we have to do things like, you know, the Amtrak corridor from LA to San Diego is falling into the Pacific Ocean. And again, I'm looking to Gavin and saying,
not great.
You fix the 10 freeway in like a week when it burned down. You really need to get the Surfliner right away.
Surfliner.
Secured. Because mm-hmm. that's a huge part of our economy again. Like it's mm-hmm. a huge part of how the state is designed to function, especially if we want to get people out of their cars.
Guys, if you've never been on the Pacific Surfliner, it's such a treat.
Well, if you can Stunning. Get on it because it's closed all the time, like good luck. I got stranded. I took it to Oceanside and then I had to get back by taking like a car service to the Irvine station because it like literally closed behind me. Like I was the last train that went down and then it was like landslide, too dangerous to put any trains on it. And then I had to get back. I mean, it's very bad. It's one of the big projects that we should be talking about as a state. And I don't know if it's as big of a priority as widening freeways, which we're just doing all the time.
Always doing.
Including in LA County.
I have one question about the SEO thing, which is like, it does seem surprising to me that they would care about people hearing that they're killing. Like, doesn't like high speed train in California seem like just like liberal nonsense that like it would be so easy for the Trump administration to be like, yeah, obviously we killed that.
Yeah, kind of, because the statement that they released was like pointing out how it's been over a decade and it still hasn't been built. So like clearly it's a waste of money.
It's been longer than that.
But but I feel like it's just always better to show people a sexier alternative in their mind. Mm-hmm. Again,
but
something big and beautiful.
Sexy.
Those words
yes,
they
I
love.
Mean, trying it doesn't even make. I mean, I don't even understand.
$72 is a lot.
Yeah, it's
very
not.
Long time.
I mean, that's not even high speed rail. It's not. It's nothing that they. It's not that the federal government was making these claims. It was like a company that was trying to say that they got buy in. Or think it's you know, this proposal is in front of
right.
Sean Duffy.
Right.
But
right.
It's this bizarre moment that we're in where nobody can like actually fact check a press release that's coming in, and then they just print it as fast as possible to try to appease mm-hmm. this right-wing idea of what this audience should look like that's going to read your stories that's all about, you know, how the country is failing. And I really just, as someone who has been covering this stuff for so long, God, I remember like writing stories about, you know, the first high-speed rail stuff and the way that the state, and again, this goes back to our conversation about CEQA a few episodes ago, we had it right there, like ready to get this problem solved, like fewer people flying, fewer people driving, people able to live in more affordable places because they could get to like a job center in a really fast yeah. and efficient and safe yeah. way, right? Like that's what this promise is about. And if we can't do something like this, you know, what can we do? It comes down to me about like housing and letting people live where they want to live. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, I don't want to make it all about like being the abundance agenda. But these are just basic, these are just basic things, but regional trains and high speed rail, that travel across the whole state.
I'm going to start bleeping the word abundance.
And maybe someday Rachel will take it. It could be like, you know, really nice music. The ones in Florida, I think you will really, they're very nice.
I'm not
like
going to Florida, ones. So that's
no, but
not.
They're going to build, that's the same company's doing the Vegas one. So you'll go to Rancho Cucamonga on the Metrolink train. And then you'll
going
switch.
To Rancho Cucamonga. You're hilarious.
Switch. I think that
I'll
one will be nice.
I'll take a train.
Though.
No, I'm not anti-train. Like,
no, I know
like,
that. You
genuinely cannot stress that
yes,
enough.
Yes, no, I'm not saying that. But I'm saying it'll be our version, I think, of a good London-type train.
I also don't want to leave LA. I just want trains around here. Mm-hmm. And
okay. Fair
like,
enough, fair
I
enough.
Want, I do want a train that goes to the Bay. That would be cool. I don't know what to tell y'all. I don't know. I'm a numb thought. We all are.
Do people even know what that is? Even
like, are you saying numb explain? Thought?
Numb tot. Numb yeah. tot, right?
No, but
like
you're saying
say
numb thought.
Thought. I'm saying yeah. thought because I'm a thought.
She's saying she likes trains and she's a slut.
Yeah. I'm a slut for trains.
Well, I'm sure we'll be discussing this again soon because the train is many years from completion. But hopefully California can get its act together, led by whoever our new governor will be. Hopefully they like trains. We are grateful to all of our listeners who have become paying subscribers. You can do that at thinkforward.la, where you can also check out Mike Bonin's podcast, What's Next Los Angeles. I can thank Sophie Bridges as our producer. She's right here in front of me. Thank you, Sophie, for producing this show. And to everyone else, we will see you next week. Bye.
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 I wonder what is going on here. Is this space hell or is it paradise? And will we make it worse or make it nice? What's the forecast tonight?